This is the IBJ podcast for the week of Monday, April 28th, 2024, brought to you by Taft. I'm your host, Mason King. Our guest this week is Brandy Davis Handy, who in February was named president of AES Indiana. That's the electricity utility from Marion County and portions of the greater Indianapolis area. And it serves more than 500,000 residential, commercial, and industrial customers. Davis Handy was promoted from her position as chief customer officer. And prior to that, she spent much of her career at parent firm AES Corporation in communications and public relations roles. That experience is entirely relevant to a major issue she now faces as president. In November, after 3 years of planning, AES Indiana upgraded several customer-related systems that were at least a quarter of a century old. It was an extremely complex operation, and it hasn't gone entirely as planned. At the height of the problems with the rollout, about 10% of the company's customers encountered billing issues. For example, being charged the wrong amount for service, receiving a bill that doesn't include all of the relevant billing information, or not receiving a bill at all. The fixes, such as detailed coding changes and corrections, have been time-consuming, despite the continuing efforts of more than 400 people working on the project. Davis Handy's goals as president include improving customer service and communication, as well as the reliability of service. In this episode of the IBJ podcast, she discusses the problems with the upgrade. She outlines the challenges of trying to grow the business when it's hemmed in by other electric utilities, as well as the company's final push to eliminate coal as a source of energy for creating electricity. And she discusses growing up in the Indianapolis area with dreams of becoming the next Oprah Winfrey and pursuing a career in media. Here's our conversation. It's my pleasure to welcome to the podcast Brandy Davis Handy, the president of AES Indiana. Thank you for making time to meet in our podcast studio today.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
I don't know if this requires disclosure, but I am an AES customer.
Thank you.
It wasn't my decision, but I'm glad I live, more or less in the middle of Marion County.
So I hope you're happy with us.
I'm a customer. I am pretty happy with you, but as a customer,
yeah.
I'm going to ask you a couple questions.
Absolutely.
I don't know if there are any real answers to these questions or easy answers, but I'm just going to ask you, as someone who is very occasionally annoyed, why do I lose power a couple of times every year? I mean, I know it's because of storms, but isn't there a way to make the electricity distribution more stormproof?
There absolutely is, but I have a couple questions first.
Yeah.
Just to better understand the circumstances of those outages, are these long-term outages, meaning the lights go out for more than an hour, or is it momentary where it
flickers? These are usually
flickers?
At least 24 hours.
24 hours.
Yeah.
And is it after, during a storm?
Often after a storm, occasionally not. Occasionally just bam, there's an explosion, and then no power.
Well, I guess the easiest way, and I also want to frame this for those who might be listening and just talk about some of the main causes of outages. And if we, go back to last year, 2023, I think the one that weighs most heavily on a lot of people's minds was in the summer. So right before that weekend of the 4th of July, when we had that rare derecho event that came through, I mean, not just central Indiana, it came through the state and hit several parts of the state, but we had significant impact throughout central Indiana and specifically throughout Indianapolis. And so for some customers, that was a 2 to 3 day restoration. And it really goes into the magnitude. And so some of the feedback that I received with that outage was, hey, yeah, the wind blew hard and it came through, it rained, but the storm was gone in, call it 30 minutes and 1 hour. But those were significant winds. And sometimes even if, those wind gusts come through and it feels like it shouldn't have caused something that causes a 24-hour outage, one of the things that we've tried to do a better job is really detailing and showing the damage on some of our social media platforms. So we typically, during a storm restoration, I would say go to our X, formerly Twitter, channel, and where you can see those large limbs, if not sometimes trees, that come down and damage our equipment. And so sometimes that plays into having a more long-term outage. Some of the other impacts, frequent impacts to outages, are accidents. We've seen a lot of that, especially kind of post-COVID, of more and more people on the roads. I think people, and I don't have the true statistic right now to speak to this, but I think that we see more distracted drivers. And so a lot of those outages, if you say, hey, it's sunny outside, I also don't see any squirrels on the line, I don't see other things that will result in this outage, it could be a couple blocks away that someone has hit a pole. And so there's so many things. I would say for you and any of your other listeners, if you truly feel like I'm seeing a significant amount of outages and I don't know the rhyme or reason, it's not clear to me, call us. We can look at your circuit. We can do an investigation to better understand and make sure. We're not always perfect. So there could be something more that's to it. And if that's the case, we're going to look into it and we're going to get it resolved. But I want to make sure that we've got open communication and that you understand what's happening on the other end.
I do want to compliment you on the outage map, because it works on my phone. And anyone who isn't aware of it, I mean, I guess you could go to AES Indiana outage map when you have a power outage, and it's dials down to like specifically like how many homes in your area are suspected of or actually are without power, which is great.
The outage map is a useful tool, and we still have room for improvement. And so we're having conversations right now on how we can make that more useful. I won't name the brand, but if you think of ordering a pizza, and sometimes you can order a pizza and it has the tracker and you can see my pizza's being made, my pizza's in the car, my pizza's at my doorstep. And so I would say ultimate goal is we want our customers to say, I know what impacted the power. I know that there is a truck on the way. Look, the truck has arrived and my power has been restored. And we know that that's the ultimate goal.
Okay, so you're headed that direction. That's great. It is probably important to note that you are the president of AES Indiana, but there is also a CEO, and that hasn't always been the case, where sometimes it's been the CEO and president being one person. Now, as president, what specifically are you in charge of? What's your job?
My job is a great question. I'm really focused on not just improving, evolving the customer experience, but our growth as a utility. And so there's four main strategic focus areas that we have as a company. It's improving customer centricity, really evolving. I think our customers, sometimes you don't think about growing with your utility, but I understand and believe that customers are always going to compare us to the other companies they come in contact with. So when you go back to the outage map, if I have a certain level of service on the website, calling in, on social media, they're going to expect that from their local utility. And we've got to grow with our customers. Also, reliability goes back to your other question, improving reliability, the resiliency of the grid, sustainability. There's a huge transformation happening within not just our state, but specifically within AES Indiana right now with the transformation of our generation fleet.
When you say generation fleet, what does that mean?
Generation fleet is how we serve our customers. And so it starts with, before it actually gets to the lines, we've got generation facilities across the state, our largest being in Petersburg, Indiana, Pike County. And so
what I would call a power plant.
A power plant.
Yeah.
And so we're able to use a number of sources, including natural gas, wind, and solar. Just made an announcement a little over a month ago that we have filed with the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission to repower our last two remaining coal units that are left in our generation fleet. And so those two units are located in our southern Indiana plant in Pike County.
I was going to ask you that a little bit later, but since we're on the topic. So the way that I see it with this request to the IURC, provided everything happens the way you want it to happen, AES Indiana Power would not be generated by coal at all. By what point?
Correct. We would become the first investor-owned utility in the state of Indiana to be out of coal by 2026.
Wow. Okay. That's amazing. Do I have this right that there are three main, again, what I would call plants? And the two already have transitioned to other cleaner forms of energy.
Yeah, so if you think of our larger generation facilities, so right here in Marion County, we have Harding Street, which is natural gas. We converted Harding Street a few years ago from coal to natural gas. We've got our largest natural gas facility in Martinsville, Indiana. That's our Eagle Valley facility, and then Petersburg. And so we were at one point, there were four coal units at Petersburg. We retired units one and two here in the last 2 years. years. And then now we have our plans to repower units 3 and 4 from coal to natural gas.
Okay, great.
And we'll add onto that. And I would say around the state of Indiana, just earlier this year, we announced the acquisition of the Hoosier Wind Farm, which is about 100 megawatts of wind. We've got a lot of solar development underway throughout the state. Our Harding Hills facility, which is in Clinton County, we are also building solar and energy storage down south at our Petersburg plant.
So did we cover your job responsibilities adequately?
Oh, I don't know if I finished. I don't think we finished. So I talked about customer centricity, reliability, sustainability, and the fourth, which is an area that I am really, really passionate about, and it's the work and efforts that we're making as it relates to community and economic development. And so AES Indiana is a company that has really helped to power the city for more than 100 years, and we take our obligation not just to power the city, but to be a really great corporate citizen, very important. And so we've got more than 2,000 people that work here in the state of Indiana. And one of the things that really makes me proud to be part of this company is how our people show up to whether they are volunteering, sitting on boards, sitting on committees. And it's a big part of who we are. And we know that it's important. And those efforts really make Indianapolis a better place to live, work, and play.
Is the CEO and president role, is it split in other markets or is this the only one?
It's split in other markets, and this is not a new model to AES Indiana. So we have previously had a separate CEO and previously had a separate president. And so my boss, our CEO, Ken Zixespe, is really focused on more, I would say he's more long-term growth, where I am more short-term. And what are the things that we need to do today? How do we prioritize as a company to ensure that we are growing, but also meeting the ever-evolving needs of our customers?
Growth is an interesting question. Tell me if I'm seeing this right. I mean, your service area is kind of landlocked. I mean, it's Marin County and then some of the contiguous counties, and then there are power providers on all sides of you. How do you grow at that point if you can't grow geographically?
You can look at growth in so many ways, and it really goes to think about how you individually have changed. And so I'll use myself as an example. 2 years ago, I purchased an electric vehicle, and I was the first person on my street with an EV. Today, there are 5 other electric vehicles just on my street. And so if I were to think about how many more are in my neighborhood, how many more are in the city, in the state, and are we prepared from an energy standpoint to have that additional load to the grid? So there are investments, there's changes that we need to make. And so you can say we can grow through ensuring that we are ready for the changing habits of our customers. And so electric vehicles is just one way. When you walk into most homes today, how many of us have smart thermostats? And so there was a time where I think that you flipped the switch and you didn't really think about it. And now you're thinking about your consumption and what that means to the bottom line. And so I've been a part of it where I'm sitting at home and I look at my app and I'm like, you know what? It doesn't need to be 73 degrees in my house. No one's home right now. So you've got more choices in front of you. And so I want our customers to, as they're thinking about, do I want to invest in the EV? What are the things that I need to know? What are the things that I need for my house? What are the other options that I have to manage my consumption and ultimately my monthly bill? I want them to look at AES Indiana as their advisors, their energy advisor. And so when I say the word growth, it's growing with our customers and their ever-evolving needs.
I would assume that you'd be really interested in really large users, large commercial or industrial users. This has literally never occurred to me before. When our city and our state are talking with companies that are interested in coming to Indianapolis, coming to this area, are you guys involved in those discussions to the point where, you're satisfying the company's questions about power?
Absolutely. That is when large companies, and especially if you think of some of the major headlines you've seen in Indiana the last couple of years, IEDC, there are so many groups that are doing great things to attract companies to our state. And one of the first questions and interests that those companies have, they want to know about energy prices. They want to know about the companies, because it's one thing to attract those businesses and attract the talent, but we also want companies who will stay and grow here. And so for many many of those, we call them C&I customers, our commercial and industrial customers. They want to know about electrification. They are electrifying their fleets. They've got employees who are driving in with EVs. They've got large sustainability objectives. Not only do they want to, you know, start operations in 2028, but from day one, they want to be 100% renewable. And so it's critically important that the utility be at the table in the beginning of those conversations.
That's interesting because, you know, obviously we write about these kinds of deals all the time, and there are always lots of partners, if you will, involved in the deal on some list, but rarely do we see, oh, you know, they also were talking with AES Indiana.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is great. Here's why I would find your job very difficult. There's a lot of reasons, trust me. But one of them is that you provide an essential service to almost everybody in the geographic area. The only time they really think about you is when they lose service or when the bill comes. Nobody wakes up and says, it is a freaking miracle that I have power. This is amazing. I have all this electronic stuff and it runs like clockwork. I never have to think about it. But when the power goes out or when they get the bill, that's when they're like, oh, AES Indiana, boo. How do you deal with that?
It's hard, but I understand it. And so we are the bill that honestly people don't want to pay. It's a bill of necessity. You don't pay it. You don't think about it unless you have to think about it. And I went to a conference a few years ago that was focused on customer satisfaction within the utility industry. And someone gave the statistic that the average utility customer spends about 7 minutes of the year truly focused. And so that 7 minutes might be my power went out, so I've got to call you. Maybe I saw something wrong with my bill. I'm going to call. I'm going to go to the website. But for the most part, you are not thinking about your utility company. I want to change that. I'm going back to working as an energy advisor, but we understand that we've got to make those the best 7 minutes possible. And that's where we really have to evolve as a company. And I think that that is a true statement across the, not just electric utility, across the energy industry as a whole.
Let me ask you about a customer service problem that's cropped up in the last 6 months. So about 6 months ago, AES Indiana upgraded its customer system, and that has resulted in thousands of customers either receiving an incorrect bill or not even receiving a bill at all. I'm sure that is a vast oversimplification of what happened. Can you dig into that a little bit more? Can you explain why the upgrade was necessary?
Yeah, we're going through a major digital transformation. This is something that not just happening at AES Indiana. I think how many companies, how many of us are upgrading all of our technology to better meet our needs for the customer. And I believe in order for us, I talked earlier about kind of the pizza tracker. We talked about the improvements of there are things that absolutely our customers can benefit from today when they go to the website, when they see the outage map, but we can do so much more. And in order to do that so much more, we have to upgrade those foundational systems. And so the customer systems that we had in place had been around for 25 plus years. And so if I were to go back and think about like what technology I had 25 years ago, I don't even know what that cell phone looked like. I'm going to assume that it was a flip phone. It probably wasn't an iPhone. How many of us have upgraded our cell phones or other technology? I probably had an iPod. Today, you do it all on just one device. And so in order for us to truly better meet the needs of our customers, we need to make these investments in our customer systems. And this is complex because our billing system, which is probably what you've heard the most of, is one of six systems that we upgraded.
Oh, wow.
And part of this upgrade is not just implementing these new systems, but implementing them in a way that they all connect together to provide a more seamless experience for our customers. And this is a complex upgrade. And the reality is that I think when you undertake something like this, six major systems that impact every single one of our customers, we went into this knowing that there were going to be issues. And openly, transparently, there have absolutely been more on the billing side. And we have worked to communicate that to our customers. One of the things that we've done, these new systems went live in the beginning of November. Since that time, we have not disconnected a customer for non-pay. We have not charged a customer a late fee. And our commitment has been until these systems are operating in the way that we know that they will and providing the benefits to our customers, those things will not happen. And so we are working to make it right. It's getting better every day. We have right now more than 400 people that are working behind the scenes on this project and a couple different time zones to ensure that these systems are operating the way that they should.
It's 400 people working on specifically the problems with the systems. These are not people who are working with customers.
No. So this is so, and not even the problems with the system. So even before going live with these new systems, this project has been probably 3 years in the making. So at the height of kind of the planning before we went live with the new, and I'll talk specifically to the billing system, because I think that's the one that customers interface with the most and the one that where we have experience. And you mentioned earlier, we've got more than 520,000 AES Indiana customers. And I would say at the height, probably about 10% of our customers were impacted in some way. That has dramatically been reduced. But the reality is we need to make sure that every single one of our customers is getting the service that we intend from the system. And so, and we're going to work behind the scenes and we'll have those additional resources until it's completely right.
So in terms of complexity, just let me go back for a second. So you have six different systems, but they're integrated. It's like problem times six or problem times six cubed because they're all stuck together, webbed together somehow. I mean, that's helpful to know.
Yeah. And just to be clear, and the problems aren't with all of those six systems. And so I think what we've really been open about are some of the errors that we saw in the billing system. And I would say kind of the easiest way to simplify it is, as you think about your utility bill, all of us have a different level of service. Some might be auto pay customers. Some might have, they're enrolled in Green Power. They've chosen to have 50% of their electricity. They want credit from renewable energy. They may be budget billing. And so what we have found is, the more complex a bill is, the more open you are to having errors in the bills. And so what we experienced in the beginning, I would say right after we went live the first week of November, is what we called bill print errors. And so on the back end, if we look at our system, the amount that you owe is correct. Your information is correct. But there was something on that bill that was not correct. And we've got an obligation to ensure that we are sending out accurate information. And so there was a period where you might have heard customers saying, hey, I didn't receive my AES Indiana bill. And so we sent out emails. There was a lot of communication on our website, on social media saying, if you have not received a bill, that's because we have found a bill error and we've got an obligation to ensure that whatever is happening in the system that's causing those bills to print out with inaccurate information, that's got to be fixed before you get the bill. And so that's one example. And so those weren't the only errors that we saw, but that was a larger issue that happened, I would say, pretty quickly after the implementation.
And some people weren't even getting their bills. Some people were getting bills that were quite a bit more than they should be. Was this what you just considered to be like a software upgrade, or was everything being switched out?
Oh, no, it was more than a software. These are completely new systems. If you use this brand name today, we are switching over to this one tomorrow. So these are completely new systems.
New vendor.
Yeah.
So again, so at the height, it was about 10% of customers. So it was 50-ish thousand customers. And that you say that is shrunk to...
Yeah. And I don't want to give inaccurate information. So without having that percentage, 10% was at the height, which I would say would have been around January, February of this year. I would say if you feel like there is something wrong with your bill, absolutely. We want you to reach out to us. You can call us at area code 317-261-8222. One of the things that could be happening, and so I mentioned that there was a period where some customers were not receiving bills. And so during that time, we were sending out a lot of communication saying, even though you didn't have the physical bill, you could log into our system if you had an account. So we were encouraging customers to log in, start an account. You could go online and pay that bill. And I don't want to say that this is the case for everyone, because every single case is unique. And that's why it's important. If you think that there's something wrong, you absolutely should call us. But let's say you went a period of having 2 months and not having a bill, and then you get the bill today, and that bill, absolutely, if you didn't go online and pay that bill, that amount is a lot more. And people forget. I mean, we kind of started the conversation by saying, you know, sometimes this is the bill or this is the transaction that you're not thinking about unless you really have to, and you don't really want to think about it. And so for some customers, if they didn't get the bill in the mail, maybe they weren't thinking about it. And that's why as a company, we made the decision, we are absolutely not going to disconnect customers or charge late fees until this is fixed, because our customers shouldn't have to suffer for something that was happening on our end. But it could be that some people are getting bills today that are a lot more and didn't realize that they weren't getting them the last 2 months.
So this project dated back about 3 years. So prior to being president, you were the chief customer officer. So was this upgrade a project of yours?
Absolutely.
In November, it happens. Tell me a little bit, just from a management perspective, I mean, what are the steps that you need to take once you discover something like this has happened?
So it starts with everything about this project is complex. Starting from what we are doing, the amount of systems that we are moving over. If you can imagine systems that have been in place for 25 plus years. And the reality is we also offer a service that doesn't stop. And so it's not like we can, you know, press the pause button and say, okay, we're not delivering electricity. Nothing's going wrong. And so this is honestly, I think, and I'll speak on behalf of most of our people at AES Indiana, probably one of the hardest things we have ever gone through. And you do it because you know that when you get to the end, it's going to be better for how we work internally, having those systems connected in a certain way. You know that you're going to be able to offer new enhanced benefits for the customers, but getting there is really, really hard. And that is what we have experienced. And so I talked about at the height, we've had more than 600 people. And so whether you are sitting in, so you know, I'll start with our customer experience team. So if you have an issue, if you call AES Indiana, that person who picks up the phone, they had to relearn their job. And so there were months and months of training of one day you're working on this system and you've been with a company for 20 years and the next day everything is brand new. And so if you can just think about the training that goes on behind the scenes. And so that's just with the customer team. There's the back office, we call it the front office. Those who are picking up the phone, they're learning a new process and you've got the back office. And that's the team that is actually working on your bill and getting bills out the door. They've got a very different experience. If you can think about from an employee standpoint, the communications team is involved, how we communicate this change to customers, the finance team. And so there is not one part of the business that's not connected. Those that you see out in the field. So we, you know, we refer to it as T&D, our transmission and distribution team. So if there is, let's say you're buying a new home, and you need to get power in your home. And so we're sending out a truck. So the system that connects from the time that you call to establish service that tells someone over in this area, we need to get a truck out there and get them powered up. Everything is connected. And so I can't overstate the magnitude of this transformation. And the hardest thing is, and what I love about AES Indiana is that we always say we live, work, and play here too. And so this is something that is completely personal because the last thing that we want is for our customers to have a bad experience. And we absolutely know and recognize that some did. And we're doing everything that we can behind the scenes to make it better. And my ask is, if you feel like you've received a bill in error, something is not right, reach out to us. Know that we are doing everything behind the scenes. We've got people working on this. And when I say 24/7, I really mean 24/7 behind the scenes.
What's the timeline at this point? When do you think this is just going to be entirely cleared up?
It's hard to put a time out there. We are seeing progress every single day. I would say 2-3 weeks ago, we made significant progress in terms of some of those bill errors. And so my hope is that we are kind of moving forward and showing our customers the benefits of this system very early summer. And so it's April now, it's almost May. And so as I think about May, I mean, that's my timeline. That's when I want to see a turnaround.
So this really has been an extraordinary problem. And it continues to get coverage on local TV. How do you go about repairing AES's reputation and win back that public confidence?
That's a great question. And I think that that gets into how you operate as a company. And so, you know, I will just take this situation aside. Our focus and my philosophy is we should always be focused on providing exceptional customer experience. And if our customers can see, and whether it's through any interaction and not just, you know, where we're showing up in the community, where you see our people, you know, how we respond to you when you call us, when you see an AES Indiana truck, you know, roll up in front of your neighborhood and how you see our people conduct themselves, that weighs in everyone's mind. And I feel like if we are always focused on putting the customer first and being really great representatives of our company in this community, that when something like this happens, I think people will remember, you know what, this is a company that's been around for more than 100 years. And so my hope is that our customers will understand that we know and acknowledge this has not felt great for everyone. And for that, we absolutely apologize. But I also hope that they remember that this is a company that has helped power this city in so many ways for more than 100 years. One of the great things that I've always loved from the day that I started with the company in 2013, and it was then Indianapolis Power and Light Company, that anytime I leave my house and I'm wearing something with a logo, I'm met with a story of my grandfather was a lineman. He retired from then IPL. My mom worked in the customer service center for 30 years. And so you should not just look at us as the local utility company. Like, I'm a part of this community. I grew up here. Like, this is my home. My kids are here. And so there is nothing more than I want is than to make this right as soon as possible. And we're committed to doing that.
Okay, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
Taft, today's modern law firm, with more than 800 attorneys in 8 primary Midwest markets and the District of Columbia, we provide solutions to the business issues facing middle market and emerging companies alike. We do this through a highly collaborative and inclusive team approach. Taft, the modern law firm. To learn more, visit taftlaw.com.
We're back with this week's edition of the IBJ Podcast and my conversation with Brandy Davis Handy, president of AES Indiana. Now, on top of all this, earlier this month, the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission approved a rate increase settlement agreement that will raise monthly rates for the average residential customer about 7.3%. Is that still accurate?
Correct.
Close to $10 per month. Why is it necessary to raise rates?
This is what we refer to as a increase in our base rates. And so this was the first time in 5 years. And this rate increase specifically goes to a couple things. And so investments in reliability and resiliency, improved customer outcomes. So we've talked about this customer system and some of the new benefits that we'll be offering. Vegetation management is a big one. Like, one of the first things we talked about was reliability. So we are increasing the investments in vegetation management across our service territory. As I think back to, you know, I referenced earlier the storm that we saw last summer, the derecho, and that was a storm where we saw significant equipment damage from trees, from fallen trees, from limbs across our service territory. There is absolutely a need in many parts of our service territory to increase what we're doing as it relates to vegetation management.
Vegetation management hits my ears, and I think about all the people that I talk to who complain about, well, AES chopped down my tree, or AES like trimmed my tree and didn't tell me they were going to do it. This has never happened to me. But again, it's like a point of friction that you guys have to manage with customers.
Well, hopefully when that happens, my hope is that it should not be a surprise. And so we've got a process on our end where a system where, you know, we know well in advance what areas of our service territory that we'll be going into and trimming trees. And we send out a number of communications beforehand that starts with letters, calls, door hangers a week out. But the reality is, and, you know, and I love my trees as well, so I get it. But I also know what happens when you've got a large storm that blows through with high winds, and those beautiful trees, sometimes those limbs come down on our lines and cause significant damage and outages that last, you know, longer than people want. And so that's why we really have to do it, is to maintain the reliability of our system. And so it's hard, but it is important because we want our lights on.
Now, initially, AES proposed raising rates by almost twice that, by about 13%. But there was a backlash from customers and industry watchdog groups that resulted in the settlement agreement. Now, assuming that the original proposal was based on the utility's real needs, does the settlement mean that there are some important issues that are going unmet?
There's a lot of needs as we think about how our community is growing, how we want to grow, how we want to ensure reliability, more that we want to do. But the reality in this situation is there were 6 interveners in this rate proceeding that we were able to sit around the table and get to a place where we believe, with what was approved by the commission, that we can make necessary investments that continue to help us improve reliability and enhance our customers' experience. And so I think we ended in a very good place.
When you start a new job, there's always a learning curve. What is the big one then for you?
I started my career with the company in 2013, and my background, and we talked about this beforehand, my background is in communications. And so when you are a communicator, I believe in order to truly tell honest and real stories, you've got to understand all aspects. And so one of the things that I'm proud of is I've been in a position to really learn so many parts of our business. So I've had conversations with people that said, hey, like it's, you know, you started, you were in communications for so long that I served as the chief customer officer. And that was a great transition because being able, and I believe that no matter what is in front of us as a company, so we've talked about some of the difficulties with this system implementation. We've talked about the rate increase and how that impacts our customers. We've talked about our generation transition and where we're headed as a company and being the first out of coal by 2026. I look at one of the most important parts of my job is ensuring that all 520,000 of our customers understand the decisions that we are making to better serve them, understand the bottom line of what that means for their monthly bill, because that's what they want to know about the most, and that we're doing everything that we can to improve on our end so that when something happens, if a storm hits, if a squirrel is on a line, if someone hits a pole, that we're right there and we're communicating to them and they understand what we are doing to get the lights back on. And I would say that to your question, the challenging part of my role, I think, is coming into this role during a major transformation in our industry as a whole. And so there was a time where what we do, we did it one way. And so when I started with the company, 99% of how we powered the city was through coal. And so we are making major investments.
Is that right?
Yes.
What year was that you started?
2013.
2013.
So this is a major.
11 years.
And for me, I'm proud to say, and I remember being a part of the first conversations when we announced that we were going to retire our coal units at Harding Street. And I remember then our commitment as a company of saying we are headed in a new way of serving our customers, but we're going to do this by balancing the needs of the customers. And what we mean by that is ensuring that the investments that we are making, that we are keeping our rates as affordable as possible. And even as you look at where we are today, and the fact that we're going to be the first utility completely out of coal, and we are still among the lowest rates of any investor-owned utility in the state of Indiana, I think that that's really important. And so we've stayed true to that. That's always going to be our main focus, is, you know, ensuring that we are accelerating towards a cleaner and greener future, but keeping our customers top of mind.
So getting back to the learning curve part.
Yeah.
It's being able to grasp all of that and then being able to.
Yeah, it's all the change. We are changing in all ways. We're changing how we do what we do, which impacts so much. And if you can think about what that change means for our people internally. And so, you know, we're a company that I talked about, you know, meeting people who, this person retired here. We've got people who've been with us for 30, 40 years. And so it's major change. Internally, we're seeing that with our customer systems, major change externally in how we power the needs of our customers. And so I think being in a leadership role during a time like that is a huge responsibility.
You left the company in 2018 after you've been here for about 7 years. What was your position at the time that you left?
I was the communications leader for AES's U.S. businesses, which...
That sounds like a national job.
Not only included our utilities, AES Indiana, AES Ohio, but then what today is AES Clean Energy, which is based in Boulder, Colorado. We were really starting up at that time. So clean energy, the clean energy business in Colorado, we have a lot of generation in the western part of the United States and in California. So Southland, Huntington Beach, Redondo Beach, also wind farms around the state. So yeah, I oversaw communications for AES's U.S. businesses.
Great job. Lots of responsibility. Why did you leave?
I went to another company where a former boss of mine from AES, who's also one of my mentors, and I went and led communications and events there. And I've told a lot of people, if you've ever made a sudden career change, one of the things that I felt immediately was how much I'd grown to love the utility industry. And so the interesting thing about really being a communicator at heart is, and I'll just speak for myself, I think early on, I felt like for me, it was about telling the story, and that could translate to any industry. And so I just want the opportunity to meet the people, to tell the stories, but I really grew to love this industry. And I think it's because of the changes. I think that there are few people that get the opportunity to say, I work in an industry at a time where everything is changing. And so like how we are serving our customers today, 10 years, I don't know if we weren't a part of this, that we would understand how we now do that work, because every aspect of how we work is in transition right now.
So you went to work for a mentor And then there was another position at some point?
Yeah, I was the chief marketing officer for Project Lead the Way, which is an organization that creates STEM curriculum for students all over the United States.
I can't believe I'm going to say this, but the pull of the utility industry was so great. Like, I need to get back to Apalco. I mean,
it's two things.
For people who don't understand,
yeah.
People who are like, utilities bad. It's an astonishing story. I mean, that you have such a comprehensive idea of this industry that you get why it works.
The pool was the industry, absolutely, because I do think it's fascinating. I love the work that I do. It's never a dull moment. For me, that's really important. But I would say the number one thing that drew me back was the people. AES in general, not just AES Indiana, but we are a global company headquartered in Arlington, Virginia, is a fantastic company. And some of my very best friends I met at AES, and it truly is a great place to work.
You grew up in Indianapolis.
I did.
Indianapolis area. Was it Lawrence?
Yeah, I'm a Lawrence Central grad.
Okay. When did you graduate?
Oh, you want me to tell my age? I graduated in 1997.
What did you think you were going to do?
People are probably sick of me saying this, so they tell everyone this. I was going to be the next Oprah. I knew it. I was going to be the next Oprah. And so my first memory, I always wanted to be a television reporter. And so I remember grabbing the newspaper and sitting on a bar stool and reading the headlines to my parents. And so I was probably one of the few elementary age children that begged to stay up to watch the 11 o'clock news.
The reason why I'm sort of speechless is because, I mean, that is so close to what I did.
Really?
Yeah. There was a bush outside of our house that had a lot of scraggly limbs. And so I used them as microphones. And I would report the neighborhood news into my fake microphone. And yeah, and I remember I'm a little bit older than the new WRTV News and Howard Caldwell. Yeah. And then maybe the beginning of Clyde Lee. I mean, it made a huge impression on me. And it's interesting to hear that happen to somebody else too.
I remember sitting in church and two pews in front of me was Liz Daly. And every Sunday thinking, like, I really want to talk to her because she had like my dream job, because not only, you know, was she working at the TV station, but I loved her focus on the community, which is something I've always been passionate about. And so this is back before social media. I wrote her a letter and I was able to go to the station and get a tour. And that was from day one. It's what I wanted to do. And I think that as I have grown and evolved, I've realized that there are so many ways to tell stories. And so I stopped reporting. I was a reporter in a few markets in North Carolina.
Oh, real quick. So where did you go to college and what did you study?
I went to college at Hampton University in Virginia and studied mass media arts with an emphasis in journalism.
Okay. So did you go into TV news?
We went straight into TV news. My first TV job was on the coast in Wilmington, North Carolina, working for an NBC station.
Where'd you go from there?
So I've worked in North Carolina. I then worked for a 24-hour news network that was based in Raleigh, but I covered news in Fayetteville, North Carolina, working in the news bureau there. And I mean, that was an interesting time because it was shortly after 9/11. My husband now, who was in the military then, who was overseas right after 9/11 in Afghanistan. And I tell that story because I think that that was a hard time. Those were hard stories to tell right after 9/11. And then also being personally impacted shortly after he got back from Afghanistan, I made the decision. I said, you know what? I don't want to do this anymore, but I think that there's other ways to tell stories. And at that point, we were engaged to be married. He got a job offer in Indianapolis, which was home for me. And I came back home and made the transition to public relations and really never looked back.
Oprah is a little bit scarce in the public space right now. What did you take, I mean, specifically from her? I mean, what things about her that you admired?
Her storytelling. And maybe I'll go back to like coming home from school and getting myself a snack and sitting down. And, you know, Oprah came on at 4 o'clock. And there were times where she had guests that I was really interested in and guests where I thought, okay, I don't know anything about this, but let me listen. And I think her way, I ended every episode thinking that was really fascinating. And so I think the ability to take something that maybe people don't even think that they need to know, want to know, should know, and being able to ask questions and to present it in a way that it's hard for someone not to be able to connect with it. And so I was always, I mean, that's what I really wanted to do. you talk about the utility industry and, you know, why would you want to go back to the utility? I think it's really fascinating what we do to get the lights to come on. And so the ability to now be in a leadership position at this company and really help to highlight across the board the important investments that we're making, how we're changing internally to better meet the needs of our customers, that to me, it's a dream job.
Thank you for explaining all this to
me.
So we'll need to check back. What do you think? A year?
Let's do it.
See how it goes.
I would love that. Okay. If you'll have me back.
Yes.
Okay. then I'll be back.
Didn't take long. Again, thank you so much for your time. That is really, really helpful.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
My thanks again to Brandy Davis Handy. And folks, before you get on with the rest of your week, there are some stories in the latest issue of IBJ I want to draw to your attention. First up, Indiana's strategy for economic development and job creation has emerged as a key issue in the Republican gubernatorial primary. And the future of the state's still-developing LEAP district in Boone County could be at stake in the outcome. Mickey Shuey details the differing takes on LEAP's development. Also in this week's issue, Daniel Bradley reports on a proposal to allow adults to stroll downtown Noblesville with alcoholic drinks. And Dave Lindquist digs into the genesis of the I Made Rock and Roll Music Festival, dedicated to the legacy of Black rock artists. Again, you can find these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at IBJ.com. And thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.